You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons Show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. Lots of big announcements this week, but we're going to focus on two primarily. We are going to talk about the PlayStation 5 reveal event, and we're also going to talk about the Destiny 2 Beyond Light reveal. This is episode number 15, and we are recording for the week of June 15th, 2020. I'd like to welcome any first-time listeners. My name is Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and this is where I normally introduce the games industry public defender and the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich, and he usually says,
"Hey, how's everybody doing?"
But he's not here right now, but you'll hear from him a little bit later in this episode. I'd like to also thank and welcome back any returning listeners, and I'd like to give a special thanks to our Patreon supporters, and I hope you are enjoying your bonuses like the Cutting Room Floor and the Mash Those Buttons Show Extended Play, and also to our Twitch subscribers. And if you want to know when we go live, just follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. If you want to keep up with what's going on with the Mash Those Buttons Show and the Mash Those Buttons Network, you can follow us on Twitter at the Mash Network. And we're really trying to get that account up to about 1K followers. So if you can spare a follow, we would appreciate it. And we'd also love to have you join our Discord community, which is mash.gg/discord, where you can meet myself, Nick, some of the other hosts from Mash Those Buttons, and then just join the Mash Those Buttons community. So like I said, we only have about two features this week, but even though it's only two, the show is actually a bit longer than normal. We try to keep the show to about an hour. This one's probably going to be running about 90 minutes or so. So we're going to just kind of hop right into it here. We're going to talk about the PS5 reveal first, and then after that, we're going to jump into Destiny 2 Beyond Light. If you just want to hear about Destiny, you can probably move about 40 minutes from now, and you'll be close to where the Destiny segment is going to start. And I'll be back after these two features.
Hype levels were at an all-time high as Sony prepared to reveal the PS5 and its games on Thursday, June 11th. Leaks and small pieces of information had already made their way to the public. Word of the PS5's extremely fast SSD, as well as Epic's demo of the Unreal 5 engine, had players ready to see what they could expect from PlayStation 5 soon. Not wanting to make the same mistakes Microsoft did during their Xbox Series X reveal, Sony showcased 26 games, 8 first-party, and 18 third-party, with lots of gameplay to make clear what players could expect in the upcoming generation. The showcase covered a wide array of games. First-party titles like Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and Horizon Forbidden West caused massive excitement across the internet as they were revealed. And the gameplay reveal of Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart, displayed the benefits of the super-fast storage of the PS5. Third-party publishers took the opportunity to deliver the first gameplay trailers of their upcoming titles like Godfall from Gearbox and Ghostwire Tokyo from Bethesda. Sony also displayed their ongoing commitment to indie games, showcasing 9 of them. At the end of the showcase, the form of the PS5 was finally revealed. The consensus is that the reveal showcase was a success, but while the subtitle of the event was called The Future of Gaming, did Sony show us the future? The hardware of the PS5 pulls console games closer to the cutting edge, but is it really future-proof? Is Sony prepared to combat Microsoft's hardware strategy that allows for faster iterations of hardware without cutting off its current user base? In 2016, Microsoft laid out its high-level strategy to put Xbox games in as many places as they could, even if it was not Xbox hardware. They view Xbox as a brand and not just a box. How will Sony combat the sheer accessibility of the Xbox ecosystem? Is Sony truly prepared for the future?
All right, myself and Nick are here with Corey Treadway, also known as Core Bar from the Drop and Spicy podcast. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing good again.
Excellent. And we are here to talk about the PS5 reveal, the future of gaming. That's what the presentation was called. We're going to debate that a little bit at the end here. But before we go and do that, let's just talk about the conference itself. Nick just raised his hand, folks. What you need, Nick?
Is the PS5 here yet?
No.
Then is the future of gaming. We're done.
His logic is infallible.
It's the future of routers, by the way, anyways.
All right, so we're actually going to work a little bit in reverse here, because at the end of the conference, they actually revealed what the console looked like, finally. And I'll be honest, I mean, I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. I think it's a mostly white console. The middle of it's black. And
is that a state of like race relations in America?
I'm too tired, Nick. I'm too tired right now.
Too soon right now, too. Just too soon.
I'm just too tired right now. But so, I mean, this will be the first of its consoles that's not primarily black. I mean, it's clearly they wanted it to look unique. They wanted it to look futuristic. You know, it really looks like something you would see, like a building you'd see in a futuristic Doctor Who episode. It's like futuristic Earth. Here we are. That's what it kind of looks like. Yeah. That was their goal. And I guess, I mean, yeah, sure, it does have like a futuristic kind of design. But at the same time, we do not live in 2020. We live in 2020. And a lot of people's entertainment centers are really focused around the black color or the darker colors. But go ahead, Nick.
Well, I want to say there have been two particular memes, I think, with it sideways and upright, depicting it as buildings. So you can find those images. The one sideways, they said it looked like an art center that like they demolished like three other small buildings to make, and it cost like $60 million.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that was the thing. At first, I was like, "How is it going to lay down?" But then I saw some pictures later that apparently it does lay down flat. So okay, cool. But I think that's the biggest problem. I think that just doesn't go with the entertainment center decor. Which is actually strange, because the PS1 was definitely built to look like a game console, you know, but the PS2, the PS3, and the PS4 were designed to go into an entertainment system. All three of those consoles, while Sony, they didn't pull a Microsoft. Microsoft pulled too far in the entertainment direction with the Xbox One. Too far, in which that's why they, you know... Xbox One is history, you know, but the PS2, the PS3, and the PS4 were also supposed to double as an entertainment device, whether it played your, you know, the PS2, the reason the PS2 trounced the Dreamcast was because of its DVD player. Mm-hmm. Sony was hoping to replicate that with the PS3 and Blu-ray, and then the PS4 just kind of followed that design philosophy to, you know, look nice in an entertainment console, you know. But now they're kind of bucking that trend, and they're really going for this "we are the future" style vibe. And I don't even know like if they can reverse the colors, because if they reverse the colors and the outside is black and the inside's white, I don't think it looks as good.
It's an Oreo.
I saw some mock-ups where they were putting some red highlights in there and doing some stuff, and I think, I mean, if you're a designer, I think you can play with it. You can play with it. And one of the things too, I mean, I think there's plenty of, plenty of custom versions. I have, for my PS4, I have the Destiny version. So that's already white. So,
right.
And I know you were expressing concern about like the white looking crappy after a few years. It looks fine still. And I mean, it's, how old is the original Destiny? 2014. So, I mean, it's not new.
6 years now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I do think whenever when the inevitable refresh comes, that they will change the form factor. You know,
it kind of reminds me of the original 360, the way they released it, because that was more of a roundish console. And then they kind of made it more square with the Xbox 360 Elite later on.
Well, the first 360 Elite looked exactly like the regular 360, except it was black. Then they changed it when they did a refresh of the hardware. That's when they changed the way it looked, because Microsoft was already heading in that direction to be more entertainment centric. Like, they wanted that to be the centerpiece of your entertainment experience. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't hate it. I think I don't care too much. Like, for me, it actually doesn't make a difference. Like, my entertainment system is focused around games versus, you know, the other way around. So it doesn't make a difference for me. I'm just not the biggest fan of it. So
how ugly would it have to be for you to be like, I'm not getting that?
It wouldn't make a difference. I mean, it could be fuck. It could be like McDonald's colors, and I'd still buy it.
I mean, it's going into an entertainment center where I'm barely gonna see it, so I don't really care too much. I do like the angles and the design. Like, I like artistic looks, but at the end of the day, I just need it to play games.
Yeah. Now there are two models, not one. There is one with a disk drive and one without. Now, normally you would think that the one without the disk drive would, or the optical disk drive, let me specify that, would be the cheaper one. But I'm not so sure in this case, because if you have a digital only version, you're going to have a larger, you know, storage unit in the actual device, which most certainly is going to cost more than an optical drive. So, how I can't see the digital version being cheaper here. So why would you buy it?
Yeah, that would be the only reason to buy it, would be if it's cheaper, because that's the way that Microsoft did theirs, was to have the digital one be cheaper.
Right.
If you have kids who have a propensity to take Paw Patrol cardboard things and put it into your PlayStation 4 and completely kill the optical drive so that you can only download games now, yes, I would strongly consider getting the only digital one. At the same time, I'm now in the market for a Blu-ray player. So if it plays Blu-ray, I may need to get the drive. So I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I am curious about the pricing, and we'll dig more into that a bit later. But let's talk about the games. And I think a lot of people were really befuddled at the opening for the conference, because it started off with a trailer for GTA 5 Online, like basically showing all the story elements of GTA 5 Online with no enhanced graphics or anything like that. It looks the same way we do right now. And then they said GTA 5 will be coming to PS5. And I'm just like, that's how you want to start this thing? Like, it really, I get putting it at the beginning because they wanted to get it out the way. But my question is, did you have to put it in at all? Like, how much did Rockstar pay you guys to do that?
Didn't they kind of start with like a little, not like an actual retrospective, but there were a lot of callbacks to prior PlayStation era things. Like, you pointed out, I think that the room that they were in at the beginning, that the room they were showing looked like the room where the baby was in that ad campaign.
It looked like it. I actually went back and watched the baby commercial. It's not the same.
Okay.
Room.
Okay.
It looked like it though.
I was just wondering if it's like they were intentionally using that as like a bridge to tomorrow, as it were, that, you know, by it's like, here's GTA 5, and we're going to take that and we're going to put that over, and it's going to be joining all of these other great new things because everything's great and we know GTA 6 is never coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I just don't, even that montage in the beginning, like, I don't need to see where we came from with PS4 because I have one. I was there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was there, you know, so we really don't need to see that. You know, this conference was for gamers. And it's like, PS4. Yeah, we know. So let's just talk about, let's just get into the stuff with the PS5. I think it would have just been a way more powerful intro if they would have just started it with Spider-Man Miles Morales.
But that's not actually a game.
Let's talk about it. We're going to get into it. So with Spider-Man Miles Morales, but actually show gameplay. So they Spider-Man Miles Morales was the first game that they showed, but it was just kind of a trailer. And I mean, it did have some in-game graphics, some in-engine stuff to kind of show how good it looks. But I think, didn't they open one of their conferences with the actual, obviously it wasn't E3 2019 because they weren't there, but E3 2018, didn't they open that showing Spider-Man?
They did.
Opened that showing Spider-Man. That, I think that would have been a phenomenal way to open it, but with actual gameplay. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be a launch title. So it should be well enough along that they could have shown gameplay.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out at the same time. So,
yeah, they actually showed 26 total games during this conference. 8 were first party, 9 were third party, 9 were indie, 9 were exclusives. Okay. So only 9 of the games they showed will probably take advantage of the faster IO of the actual PlayStation. But Spider-Man Miles Morales, you know, it will be one of them. But you know,
if they're getting that out as a launch title, and it would seem that they're going to be doing a lot of that on the back of the existing Spider-Man game. Or am I just projecting a little too much here? To think that they're able to retrofit the work they did on the PS4 for the architecture of the PS5 and have it out as a launch title, I feel like that, well, it might be capable of using the system in that way. I'm not going to hold my breath expecting it to do that.
Well, no, because I think, so one of the first demos that we never saw, this was just shown to the press only, was the original Spider-Man. Well, not the original, but, you know, the Spider-Man from 2018. Was it 2018? It was 2018,
yeah.
Right?
I think it was 2018.
Was Spider-Man from 2018 running on the new PlayStation hardware? So they were already working on it. They knew it was coming, obviously, and they probably used that as a test, you know?
Right.
Because that's the thing. The thing about the PS4 and the PS5, the CPU architecture is the same. The difference is obviously there's a lot of different hardware in it, but I think the biggest difference is using that very fast SSD. I don't want to say NVMe because I'm pretty sure it's NVMe hard drive, but proprietary. But I don't know what Sony actually calls it. And you know, so they were already, I think they already had worked on it and were ready for that. So there's been a lot of confusion around this game. Because the Sony executive said it was an expansion. And then, you know, I want to say Naughty Dog, but it's not Naughty Dog. It is not Sucker Punch. It's
Insomniac.
So Insomniac said that, no, it's its own game. And I'm like, why can't you guys just say it's a standalone expansion? Because that's probably what it is. I mean, it's probably a standalone expansion. Oh. Like, basically, use the assets from the other game. You're probably going to be in the same New York City, maybe some new areas. You know, it used probably the same mechanics, the same engine. Just say it's a standalone expansion. The only thing I can think of, the only reason I can think that they don't want to call it a standalone expansion is that they're going to charge you $60 for it.
I feel like the marketing department at Insomniac needs to talk to Blizzard, and they all got to figure out what exactly an expansion and a sequel is.
Yeah, because they're definitely not calling it a sequel.
No.
It's just calling it, it's a standalone game. Dude, it's a standalone expansion. Just like Infamous First Light, Uncharted Lost Legacy, you know, but I think they want to charge you $60 for it. So they don't want to say expansion, because if you say expansion and you're talking over $30,
people get upset. Yeah, kinda,
but just, yeah. Just from the semantical standpoint, like trying to like parse all these words, how do you expand on a game that existed for a prior console? Like, to me, an expansion is I have the game, I'm buying additional content. I guess that would be DLC now, as the kids call it. I'm buying that and putting it onto the existing software that I've already purchased, and it can all sit on the same hard drive. But if you're transitioning console generations, like, technically, if it's a standalone expansion, it still needs to have the base game as part of it, or at least the guts of the base game to be able to use it. So it's its own thing.
I'm sure it does. It probably has it baked into it, just like Infamous First Light. You did not have to have Infamous Second Son to play Infamous First Light, but it was the same city, same mechanics, It was the same game. It was just packaged together. So that's why it's called a standalone expansion. It's exactly what you said it was, except that you don't need to actually purchase the base game to play it.
So does that, can we infer then, if you're basically buying the guts of the original Spider-Man game, can we just infer then, has anybody confirmed that Spider-Man 4 will be coming to the PS5? Or not Spider-Man, was it? No, it wasn't called Spider-Man.
It's just called Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. It was on the PS4. I'm getting confused by all the Spider-Man. But will that game be coming then in any form to the PS5, or it's just one of those, cause it'll be backwards compatible, that you'll just be able to put your old disc in there, assuming you had it. And I'm sure
it'll be a backward compatible game. Probably. I'm sure God of War will also be a backward compatible game. I mean, They're two of the best games on the console. So I would hope so.
I imagine they'd probably be backwards compatible with some, tune-ups for the PS5.
Right. Yeah. So I'm sure you can just play it if you have it. But other games, let's move on to another game. And we're not going to go through all of the games here. I think we're just going to go through some that had some impact, or at least that way we're going to say about. I would like to talk about Gran Turismo very briefly. And I just really hope that they've been paying attention to what Forza has been doing. And don't get caught up in your pride, GT. I know you were one of the first. You were one of the first. But Forza has been eating your lunch for years. You know, so I just really hope that they take the lessons learned from Forza over the last few years and kind of put that into GT, because the last GT, it wasn't a bad game. Don't get me wrong. It definitely wasn't a bad game, but I don't know, man. Maybe it's because when they announce a GT, they don't bring a car down from the ceiling and show it to everybody. Maybe that's what the part of the formula that they're missing. It just really wasn't hitting. Like, if you're going to play a simulation racer, just play Forza, you know?
Yeah, but also, the last time they did a Gran Turismo was in 2017, and the last one that was numbered was in 2013, back on the PS3. Yeah. So they've been a while since there's been a Gran Turismo now, and Forza always makes a better game every year and does it within a year, not within, like, two years, because it's two companies, but still, each version's been great.
Yeah, it's a little unfair, because Forza, like the studio that puts Forza together, is made up of some of probably the greatest minds in racing games. You know, you have people from like Bizarre, like when that dissolved, and then you also have people like some very good people who came from Codemasters to come together to make that studio. You know, so it's a little unfair. It's like you know, which set of bulls do you want to talk about? You know, that's what it's like. Obviously, I want to talk about Ratchet and Clank for a second. Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. And I think this was a special, like them showing this game was really special, because I feel like it's the only game that actually displayed what the SSD can do, like what that actually means. And it's so hard to translate this across in video, I think. Because unless you know the process that goes behind loading assets, like the way that game did, it doesn't seem that special, you know. But you know, the way that Ratchet was able to pull the Rift and instantly be someplace else, that was really impressive. That, and the fact that when he started shooting and things were breaking apart, shit was everywhere. You know, so the particle, like, it was awesome. Like, it was a really great demo that showed what they can do with having a faster input output and being able to load assets instantly from the hard drive versus having to load them in the RAM first and then, you know, play them in the game.
And I'm really glad that they chose for this roundabout for the tech demo to be Ratchet and Clank and not Knack or Knack 2, because.
Oh, Jesus. Hey, I like didn't they green light? You're the only person I know that did. They green lit a Knack 3, didn't they?
I think they did.
I should not be that excited about that.
But yeah, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart was a great demo of what that hardware can do. Because if you just look at the graphics of the PS5, they're better than the PS4. They're better than the Xbox One X. But it doesn't feel like that big of a leap. It just looks a bit clearer, you know, from a graphical perspective. And I mean, that's just the case. Like, I've said it a few times in the show already. if you have watched somebody stream that has like a 2080 graphics card or even a 2070 graphics card, you've already seen graphics that look like this, you know? So it's not going to be that impressive just from a graphical perspective. It looks more like they're catching up than setting the tone. I did want to talk about Returnal for a second, only because it's House Marquee. And I'm a huge fan of House Marquee. I was very disappointed when they decided to no longer do arcade games, but I understood. Their last arcade game, Next Machina, was excellent. I really enjoyed it. I also enjoyed Resogun. When I'm talking to people on the phone, I play Resogun. I really enjoyed the games. This is their first game since they decided to no longer do arcade games. This is a third person adventure game, it looks like. I don't know, it might have some shooting elements in it as well, but it's a loop game. Apparently this is going to be a thing now where you're in like in a time loop, or I don't want to say Deathloop because that's the name of an actual game, where every time you die, you go back to a certain spot. And that's not new, right? That's been happening over the course of the last few years. Like, there was a game that just came out last year, and Outer Wilds was like that, where I think the sun, like, either you die someplace or the sun explodes or something like that after a certain amount of time, mm-hmm. and you go back to a certain point, but you kind of have to take the pieces you have already and try to figure out this puzzle.
Is there like a game jam where like everybody played Majora's Mask and then had to come up with all these ideas?
I mean, it might be, because I saw a bunch of PC games that did similar tactics. Like there was one where a guy was stuck on the moon base and had to keep reliving the same day over and over again before he escaped.
You know, I wonder if that's like a commentary on like the last 4 years of how everybody feels.
You know, we've seen this before. There's always a popular type of game, right? And then you'll see a bunch of the same type of game come out, you know, at the same time. So let's move on. Sackboy, A Big Adventure. So I just thought it was another Little Big Planet, but I was actually pleasantly surprised to see that it's not just another Little Big Planet. It's an actual 3D platformer with co-op, which, I mean, Sony, I don't really think that that hasn't really been a thing for them in a while. Like, you know, they're usually focused on these bigger epic games versus, you know, something cool like this. So I think it's actually pretty cool that they're doing a 3D platformer.
Yeah, me and my wife are definitely going to pick this up. Like, she got real giddy when this one popped up. She's like, we have a game to play together. I'm like, all right, I'll make sure to pick it up once I get that PS5.
Yeah. Ghostwire Tokyo, I thought it was a good one to talk about or just bring up, because, you know, this is our first time seeing what the gameplay looks like. I did not expect it to be a first-person game or first-person shooter. It is a first-person shooter, but there are no guns. You just do like symbols with your hands and it shoots shit at ghosts. I know there's an actual name for that, and I have no idea what it is. You know, I'm prepared for this show. but I thought that was pretty cool that we got to finally see that. We got to see what Godfall plays like, because, I mean, both Ghostwire Tokyo and Godfall, all we saw was like kind of like a teaser trailer, but Godfall looks like it's a melee combat game. And how well that's going to turn out, we'll see. They also displayed Oddworld Soulstorm. And I don't know, is that a reboot of Oddworld?
That's what it looks like.
It kind of felt like it, a reboot of Oddworld, but darker. You know, because Oddworld was always kind of goofy. But when I played, you know, when I played through Oddworld, especially the second time, when I played through Outworld, I think, I don't know, 5-6 years ago when they remade the HD remake. It's a dark fucking game.
Yeah, it's got a lot of dark humor.
It's got a lot of dark humor because, I mean, it's about slavery. You know, straight up, it's about slavery. And now it really feels like they're kind of taking the humorous part out of it. So I do believe it is a remake. There's definitely a Demon Souls remake, which I'm just kind of like, oh, they couldn't make a Dark Souls 4? Like, I guess.
Well, the reason they made Dark Souls is because Sony owns Demon Souls.
Ah, okay. So, okay, I gotcha. That makes more sense. Now, I didn't realize Sony actually owned the license to Demon Souls, so now they're just trying to cash in a little bit. since almost, I shouldn't say all combat games, but so many combat games are doing the Souls Light strategy. So, also another game that I was interested in, we finally saw some gameplay for it, which is Deathloop. Because the last time we saw Deathloop, it was just a cinematic teaser. It didn't really tell us about the gameplay, but it looks like Dishonored, but with guns, you know. I mean, that's Arkane's bread and butter, man. I think that's why, one of the reasons why Wolfenstein, the Youngbloods just didn't work out that great, because it's not really their style. Their style is, you know, a first-person game with powers and abilities and, you know, being able to use that in combat, and that's what Deathloop is. But you saw gameplay from the male side, not from the female side. So I don't know if you actually play as her or if you have to avoid her, because from what I can tell, as the guy, you're trying to kill certain people within a certain time period, and she is trying to kill you. So I'm curious how that's going to go. And I'm also curious if there's going to be a multiplayer aspect where you can hop into somebody else's game and hunt them down.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Interesting, but I'd turn it off. I'd turn it off, because the last thing I need is somebody griefing me in a game. Like, I just, that is essentially what it is, just griefing. Like, yeah. You know. They've wrapped up, I'm pretty sure this is the last trailer they showed, with Horizon Forbidden West. That's how they ended the show. I think a lot of the stuff they showed was actually in-engine, which is impressive. And I'm just really excited for it. I can't even really express it right now. I'm just like super excited for Horizon Forbidden West. I honestly don't expect to see it. Maybe in 2021. Maybe.
If we're lucky, that seems real too soon.
Why? Because Horizon Zero Dawn came out in 2017.
Guess it could be. I still think it'd be a little longer than that.
Why? You think Horizon? So a 5-year game development cycle is actually pretty long. A 7-year game development cycle is that only comes with games that are phenomenal or where they've made mistakes. I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, so BioShock Infinite took 7 years to make, but so did Sleeping Dogs.
That's true.
So, and Sleeping Dogs was good. And Sleeping Dogs is good, don't get me wrong, but it definitely shouldn't have taken 7 years to make that game. Didn't, L.A. Noir also take 7 years to make? And that was riddled with problems, you know? So I think 5 years from Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, I think that's a good amount of time, especially since they do not have to build that engine from scratch. That engine has already been built. They're using the Decima engine. They have whatever code changes Kojima made to it to make Death Stranding.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's true.
So I think 5 years is enough. So I think like 2021, 2022 at the latest, to be honest with you.
Well, mine's more based on a Sony's track record of showing me stuff and then it taking a lot longer than it expects to get released.
Yeah. I mean, I highly doubt that they made the game. They started working on Horizon like last year. I just highly doubt that. So, but yeah, I mean, this was definitely a show for gamers. They wanted to make sure they didn't make the same mistake as Microsoft, where people were upset that, you know, they were saying that Microsoft didn't show enough gameplay. But the thing about the Microsoft conference was really about showing how the games looked, which most of the stuff you saw at the Microsoft conference was the game and you were games in the engine. Just not direct gameplay footage. So, like we said earlier, there has been no price announcement. There's been a leak that it's going to cost like $700. I just can't believe that's going to happen. I want to say this console will not cost more than $500, at least the base model. You know, there may be a model that's a bit more expensive, but no more than $500. And that's going to be a tough sell when you're not in a recession. And we're in a recession. $500 console is going to be a really tough sell. I cannot see it being over that.
Yeah, well, but they did that when they released the PS3. That was also during a recession, not as bad as this recession. But they still try to release that one at $600 and try to say justify that with a second job.
The base model is $500, and the better model is $600. But still, like, $400 is a sweet spot for a console. Microsoft doesn't have to play by this rule, though, because they have a family of consoles. And they've already said they're not going to produce, like, they're not going to go through, like, launch production like they normally do with the Xbox One Series X, right? They're not going to do that because they just don't expect that many people to buy it at launch. So I actually think the Series X is going to be, like, $600, you know? But the thing is, like, they're supposed to have a lower model, which they haven't talked about yet. But the newer games on the Series X will still play on the Xbox One X, you know? So it's not like you're really missing out here. So I think Microsoft has a little bit more leeway there. I don't think Sony has that. You have to buy their hardware. Because even if you don't buy the Microsoft hardware, you can still buy their games on the different Xboxes, on PC. You know, Sony does not have that. So I'm expecting for the console to cost about $500, and they will take a loss on it, and they're going to try to recoup it in software sales. And that's normal for consoles. Mm-hmm. The current console generation is different because I think both Microsoft and Sony were at least breaking even on the hardware, at the very least. That's not normal. I think it took like 4 or 5 years for them to break even, or is it make a profit on their hardware for the PS3 and the Xbox 360. It took them years to break even, definitely.
The PS3 lost a lot more money because once they released that original price, they had to cut the prices by a lot more and lost even more money. And the 360's ring of death caused them to lose an exorbitant amount of money on those.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. I think the reason why we haven't seen pricing yet is because they're trying to figure out a way. Both of them are trying to figure out a way to bring the pricing down, whether it be some type of subsidy or something like that. Like, okay, well, if you get PSN, if you subscribe to PSN for 2 years, it's only going to cost this much, you know. It's only focused on the games, but the conference was called The Future of Gaming, but it's like the PlayStation 5 is not really the future of gaming. It's the now, you know, it's bringing the console hardware up to current hardware. So, you know, you've heard like, you know, Tim Sweeney from Epic and various people talk about how the PlayStation 5's hard drive is better than anything on PC. And I will say it is definitely faster than what you can get on PC, but you can still get a comparable, like somewhat comparable NVMe drive for your PC. You've been able to do that for the last 5 years, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've bought a motherboard, I want to say in the last 3 years, it probably has a slot for an NVMe hard drive. And Epic already said that you can run that Unreal Engine 5 demo on a 2070 card and an NVMe hard drive.
Yeah,
and
they're constantly coming out some newer drives, anyways, that are for PC, that by the time the PlayStation 5 comes out, we're probably going to have a comparable speed, if not faster.
Exactly. So, what the PlayStation 5 really does is it brings consoles up to date, and it's going to force developers to, you know, really use more up to date hardware, better graphics, use the storage more effectively, you know, stuff like that. But I'm not necessarily convinced that Sony is truly prepared for the future. How are they going to handle crossplay? How are they going to handle their hardware refreshes? Because we already know that Microsoft is going to, when they do their hardware refreshes, they are going to actually, it's going to make a dent. It's going to be different. It's going to actually improve the hardware, not just, you know, kind of tweak it a little bit, like kind of like the PS4 Pro versus the Xbox One X. And also how they're going to handle the accessibility for their games. Because Microsoft, as a, you know, Xbox, as an ecosystem, is just way more accessible than the PlayStation brand is right now. So how are they going to respond to that? That's the future of games. So what are they going to do? And I'm just not convinced that they are truly prepared for the future. I hope they are, because we need Sony to be. We do not need another, we don't need Microsoft to be in a drastic lead like they were, because that led to some dark times. Like, we don't need Sony fucking up again and letting Microsoft get comfortable in the front. We need both of those companies to be at each other's throats all the time.
Good competition, you know, all around. We need,
I mean, right now, if Microsoft was at Sony's throat during this generation, we would probably have multi-platform crossplay. But Sony was like, well, no, why will we need to crossplay with Microsoft? Why we need to crossplay PC? Just play with other people on the PlayStation Network. We don't see the problem. We don't need them. You know, if Microsoft was doing better, I think we'd have, you know, crossplay at this point. So, we'll see. But you guys got any thoughts before we close up here?
And my one thought is, like, looking at the new console, I'm hoping those extra vents makes it not sound like a jet engine this time.
Okay, well, if that's that, then we are done. Thank you guys very much for talking about the PS5 reveal.
On June 9th, Bungie revealed the future of Destiny by announcing Destiny 2 Beyond Light. Beyond Light will send Guardians to Europa to fight Aramis, a fallen warrior who wants revenge against the Traveler for scattering the fallen houses. Guardians will also see a face they haven't seen in a long time, the Stranger. Beyond Light will introduce a new element type born in darkness, Stasis. Bungie also revealed the next two major expansions coming in 2021 and 2022, The Witch Queen and Lightfall. After discussing upcoming quality of life improvements and the next generation console support, Bungie talked about the Destiny content vault. According to Luke Smith, Destiny is becoming hard to manage, and to help with that, they will be taking older, less played content and archiving it. But occasionally players will see content return temporarily. On the bright side, content from the original Destiny will make its way to Destiny 2. So Guardians will be able to play some classic content like Cosmodrome and Vault of Glass. The reveal ended with a preview of the current content season in Destiny 2, the Season of Arrivals. Players can expect new exotic quests, a new dungeon, and story that will prepare them for what's to come in new expansions.
All right, I am here with Ben Guyton, also known as the Dude Abides. What is up, dude?
Hey, Jai, long time no talk. How you been?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Can't complain. You know, working from home like a lot of other people, so a lot of video games to play then.
Oh, yeah. That's not how my work from home works.
Well, it's funny. I think first when it first all started, you tweeted something about, for all you people working from home now, that means you actually have to work. Don't just sit there. And I remind myself of that all the time when I get stuck on a game. So thanks for that tip.
Yeah, no problem. I do what I can. But we're not here to talk about working from home or work from home etiquette. We are here to talk about the Destiny 2 Beyond Light reveal. That reveal happened earlier this week, June 9th, if I remember correctly. And I thought the reveal was going to be an hour long because I actually watched it after the fact. And the video said about 60 minutes. I'm like, okay. Turns out the reveal was only about 30 minutes long. It was actually, I thought it was well done. It was compact. It was concise. They gave you the information that you needed. But the reason why the video was so long is because they actually kicked it off with support for Black Lives Matter. And they actually did an 8-minute and 46-second countdown at the very beginning, which I know had to enrage a lot of people because they don't, you know, don't want politics in their games.
Well, first off, fuck those people.
Yeah, but I mean, Bungie, I know that they had some employees out at the protest that actually ended up getting tear gas too. So they are, it is not just virtue signaling. It is a very real stance there.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the community manager, DMG04 was one of those people. They're one of the better companies out there when it comes to being involved and, you know, taking a stance. So I did the same thing. I watched a recording later and props to them for, speaking up at the way they have throughout all of this going on.
Absolutely. And they also talked about the current situation with COVID-19, and there were only two people that were really involved with the reveal. I know normally with the reveals, they like to have interviews with developers or writers, and they put them in, you know, the little hype videos. I call them the Destiny hype videos that they do, because there is every single time they do one of those events or those reveals where they have to show off the new content, it's never like, yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy it. It's like, no, this is the best we've ever done. This is the best Destiny. This is Destiny the way it was made to be played. And sometimes that's part of the problem with how they handle those hype videos, because sometimes they overhype. I think the only one they did not overhype was Forsaken.
Yeah, Destiny or Bungie as a studio for the longest time, they're one of the best at, you know, running the hype train and getting it going. But I can agree they can show some expectations a little bit too high sometimes and not follow through, obviously, in quite a few different ways. But having just Mark Noseworthy and Luke Smith, you know, the two masterminds behind what's happening, just talk to us directly with what their vision is, I think was a big step in being more transparent as a production company than they ever have been. They've been hearing that feedback for a long time, and I think they've finally gotten a hold of it, and hopefully it turns out for the best.
Yeah, I will say it definitely felt more authentic. Like, it definitely felt more authentic, the video, just because it just felt less scripted, you know? Like, it just felt like they were just talking. Like, they had talking points. Actually, no, don't get me wrong. Some parts were scripted. You can clearly see them looking at the thing that they're supposed to read, but that's just marketing speak.
Yeah.
But after they would get past that part and start talking a little bit, it felt a bit more authentic. But, they kicked off with the announcement of Destiny 2 Beyond Light. They showed a trailer that had Aeris Morn, the Drifter, and of all people, the Stranger. So when I saw the XO, I immediately said, that's the Stranger. I was like, no, they said the Stranger was done. And I had to go back and look at screenshots to see what the Stranger actually looked like. I should have just kept the video going because they say it's the Stranger, but I was like, no way. Well, go ahead.
It's funny, the kind of retcon and then taking back the retcon that they've now done. I'm excited to see the Stranger back. That's one of the, I was disappointed when they said that storyline wasn't going to get unpacked. So to see Elsie Bray make her reappearance is really exciting.
Yeah. So the Stranger, I guess she called Aeris Morn and the Drifter, and she brought them to Europa because there is a pyramid ship there. Now, I as soon as I saw Aeris Morn, I was like, oh, but then I saw a Drifter. I'm like, okay, almost any content that has Aeris Morn, I'm down on. I think she is my most hated character in Destiny. Like, anytime I see her, I'm just like, ah, shit.
she can be a bit of a drag, man. Like, the voice actor does an amazing job with her performances, but I feel like some of the writing is just so long-winded for the wrong reasons, and she just kind of tends to go on too long.
It is, and honestly, because I'm going to be upfront with everybody. I have not played through Shadowkeep. I got 4 hours in the Shadowkeep. I was bored to tears, and I couldn't even get my friend to play because, and we're going to get into this, how they handled the seasonal content, because he's like, fuck that. I'm not going to have time to grind like this all the time. It's like, I'm not even going to play Destiny. And so I'm with like 4 hours in. I'm like, I feel like this is a job. I'm not going to play. Actually, behind the scenes, in my original notes, I didn't call it the pyramid ship. I called it the darkness triangle because I didn't know what they were actually calling them in game because I never got that far. All I know is that it was a triangle. It had to do with darkness. And then when I heard somebody call it pyramid ship, I'm like, okay, that makes more sense.
They're also referred to as the 3D Doritos.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that in the drone?
Yeah. So it's Aeris, Stranger, and the Drifter on Europa. Obviously, Guardians are going to go to Europa, which, if you don't know what that is a moon of Jupiter. And there's going to be a new enemy, Aramis, I believe is the name, if I'm saying that correctly. And it's going to be a fallen warrior that wants revenge against the Traveler for scattering the fallen houses. So, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with fallen enemies. The only enemies, if the only enemies I don't really like playing against are actually the Hive. If you have a Hive centric expansion, I'm a little bit wary of it. Like, I know a lot of people love the Taken King, and the Taken King was great because of how it expanded the game and fixed some content problems, you know. But I find the Hive incredibly boring, which is probably why I don't like to deal with Aeris Morn, because whenever she's around, you know, it's the Hive. You know,
yeah,
you have Hive.
I think the Fallen are a fun race to fight against, but one of my issues with Fallen as a main story race is they don't speak our language. So it's harder to get a good connection with the main enemy compared to like a Gaul, for instance. You know, so that part kind of turns me off. But they did have the voice actor at the very end of this clip. I can't remember her name. But Aramis, they did have her talking in English. So maybe they made that change this time. I don't know.
So any of the enemies can speak English. Because remember, even there's a lot of Cabal that don't speak English. Like the dude with the broom on his head. I don't remember what his name is. He was from the Strike. Yeah, Valastar.
Rockets McDigface.
Yes. That guy, yes. Valastar. He didn't speak English. And that, you know what? That was a huge problem for me in Destiny. And that's why I think Forsaken was their best expansion, because most of the bad guys spoke English.
Yeah.
You can actually understand what they're saying. You get a feel for why that you can actually hate them for a reason besides somebody telling you you don't like this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So that's the thing about Forsaken. And yeah, you're right. I mean, having the bad guy, or, you know, if there's more than one bad guy speaking English, I think that is a tremendous help. So yeah, I think any of the villains can speak English. I think the only race we haven't seen speak English, well, two, the Vex and the Hive, right?
Yeah. I don't know how to talk robot. So
yeah, so I'm sure they can figure out a way to make the Hive speak English. Not the Hive, but the Vex. The Hive might be a little bit different, but you know, we'll get into that later maybe. But yeah, you're also going to get a new power based on darkness, stasis, which I'm like, okay, that's cool. It's the first new elemental type that they've added since the game launched. So you've always had solar, you've had Arc and then Void, and now there's going to be stasis. So it's going to be new ultimates, it's going to be new abilities, it's going to be new weapons. Well, actually, we always knew it was going to be new weapons, but you know, based on that damage type. So I don't think they really showed anything regarding the stasis
based on what they kind of talked about. And this is from one of the articles that has been released in the past few days about their future. One of them wrote, as the new threat emerges, so too does a mysterious new power, stasis. Rooted in darkness, guardians will wield this new elemental power alongside Arc, Solar, and Void, summoning epic supers to dominate the battlefield. Titans, warlocks, and hunters each use stasis in a different way, from slowing down foes with stasis fields to encasing and shattering enemies with destructive might. That last sentence is the one that really stands out for me, because it sounds like CC-based supers, kind of. Maybe slowing down, you know, groups of enemies. There was a clip at the end of the gameplay trailer showing enemies like shattering, like in ice. So right. It could be some things along those lines, less damage based, but more just crowd control kind of stuff, which will be interesting because they've never really explored that with the supers. So,
yes. And that being the case, I just really hope they're paying attention to other games that use CC based abilities, because that shit can become a problem really fast, especially in your multiplayer. Hello, mm-hmm. Overwatch. How yep. are you?
I hate to say it, but I feel like we've talked ad nauseum together about CC and Overwatch, and here we are. It's coming to Destiny. I already know it's going to happen, right?
Yeah. I mean,
the new introduction of this, the new exotic, the Witherhorn or the Blighting Lion, has CC, and it's running rampant in the Crucible, and it's the only CC gun there really is. So just one weapon being there is already showing how crazy it can be in PvP.
Yeah, like in a first person shooter, it's just, I think like CC is just a bad idea, generally speaking. Now for PvE, it's one thing. For PvP, it's a different story, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited for the PvE side of it, especially to see what they do with grenades, because we're going to get at least three new grenades with this stasis class. So it'll be interesting to see if we get some ones akin to the smokes in Destiny 1 that the hunters had that really slowed people down. That'll be really cool to see. But on a game so reliant on movement in Crucible, I think that's going to be trouble. So hopefully they can foresee that. But as we've seen this past season, foreseeing problems in the Crucible has been their downfall in the past year. So
right. See. So moving forward, they also did something I did not expect. They announced the expansions for 2021 and 2022. 2021, we're going to have an expansion called The Witch Queen. which the Witch Queen is the sister of Oryx, the Taken King. That will make her the auntie of Crota, Hive Jesus. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're going to completely kill this family off like the Skywalkers. Like, you know, it's I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Hive centric Hive centric stories or expansions. However, the Taken King, technically speaking, gave you a completely different completely new enemy type, but let's be real, they were reskinned enemies. What I think they would be awesome if they actually managed to bring a new enemy type into the fold. Like, it's time. You have a new element, bring a new enemy. You know, make it different. Don't just make her take the Taken. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, now she's in charge of the Taken and that's it. Like, it's time for a new enemy in Destiny.
And so everyone has kind of been anticipating the introduction of the fifth race with the pyramid ships arriving called the Veil. I don't know if you've seen into that. There's concept art all the way back from before Destiny 1 alongside of Europa and the pyramid ships is a fifth enemy race called the Veil. And that's what everyone's expecting to see. At least when darkness fully comes, it's probably going to be closer to the Witch Queen coming around, because Savathun, if you've played any of the new content since Tuesday, the first story mission, you're messing around with Savathun. So this whole season right now is a precursor to the fall expansion, and they're really, really building up on just the interactions between the darkness. And personally, as a big fan of the Taken King lore in regards to the Books of Sorrow, I can't wait to see the rest of this fleshed out, because that's one of the more cohesive in-game storytelling that they've done well. And I'm excited to see them finally flesh it out.
Yeah. So that one's going to be exciting, especially if they manage to, I don't know, actually tell the story in the fucking game, you know. The next expansion in 2022 is Lightfall, which is actually a working title. So that might not be the actual name of the expansion, but it is coming 2022. And it's supposed to be the culmination of this current expansion and the next expansion. So this is kind of like, I don't know, your Avengers movie versus the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
So, but they didn't really give much information on that. I do have some theories, and I kind of want to get into that a little later when we talk about the season of arrivals a little bit. But they, just to get through this quickly, they did talk about some upcoming changes. Like changing the seasonal model for year four to get rid of the FOMO or the fear of missing out, which, I mean, and Luke Smith, he said, yeah, you could put that on me. He has said that he has apologized for his shitty decision so many times at this point, it doesn't even make a difference. I'm sorry, Luke. Like, just think about this shit before you do it. And actually, you know what? They did think about it before they did it. You know, that they made the seasonal model the way they did, where, you know, if you don't get certain content or you don't get certain items at a certain time, you just miss it. They did that on purpose to try to force players to be engaged, and it backfired. It just backfired. I sometimes I think about changing my Twitter name from Jostradamus to something else because it's long. But then a fucking prediction that I made comes true. It's like, well, now I got to keep the name, you know. And that's the first thing I said when I heard how they were handling the seasonal content last year. I was like, I know as a adult with a full-time job and a podcast network to run, I'm not going to have time to just sit and play Destiny all the time.
Yeah. You know? I mean, Bungie has the unfortunate long-running meme of we're listening for a very good reason. They always say we're listening, but they kind of always make the same mistakes that, the minute they announce it, the community gives them feedback right away. They're like, no, that's a bad idea, and they run with it anyway. So I agree. His apologies kind of fall on deaf ears after a while.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them actually change the way they approach things and, you know, make drastic changes when things aren't going well. Because this seasonal model's been tough, man. This is the least I've played Destiny in a full year. It's hard just doing nothing but bounties for no reason, especially with the introduction to sunsetting weapons, so right. it's kind of even less of a reason to play until, you know, some good new systems and stuff come into play in the fall.
So I mean, obviously they made those decisions probably months in advance, before they even made the content, and I wonder if they were nervous about Anthem and the Division 2 and people leaving Destiny to go play those games. And if they were, hypothetically, let's say that's why they made that decision, I think that's just the wrong way to take that. Having people play multiple games like that, you know, they call them looter shooters. I hate that word. They're fucking dungeon crawlers. Okay. Okay. So, you know, to have people play multiple styles of game like that, that actually alleviates pressure on the developers. Like, okay, well, you play Destiny 2 during this season and you get all the stuff, or you get tired of it, then you move to the Division, then you do that, then you move to Anthem, if Anthem was actually good, and you do that, and then the next season rolls around and you run through the content again. That means you don't have to constantly pump out content to keep people happy, or you don't have to constantly give people busy work, like doing all these bounties, like you're saying. Like, they just play the good stuff that they want to play, and then they can move on and come back. That would keep me happy as a gamer. You know, I mean, I understand if some people only play Destiny, and then maybe you can do something special for those people, you know, but no, like, I think it actually works out better.
And the problem gets even further exacerbated when every season launches and the only way to play the new content is to do their artificial power grind by playing nothing but old content that you've been playing for 3 years.
Right.
That makes it all even harder to swallow when, if it is a game that you play along with other games like I do, I come back to a new season to do the same stuff I've been doing for 2 years. It's hard for me to want to continue doing that. So they really need to rethink the seasonal model. I think they know how poorly it's gone. I mean, last season was the worst one ever. You know, they tried to do trials. They said they didn't want to launch it half baked, and they gave everyone literally raw dough. they had to deactivate it this weekend because people couldn't go to the lighthouse after going flawless. So they've got to fix the bugs. You know, it's been an ongoing problem since leaving Activision. And they addressed that with hopefully the Destiny content vault helping them with that. I just want to see them actually do it.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the Destiny content vault in a minute. I just want to run through this quickly. So they also said that they're working on transmog for armor sets. I'm sorry, but that should, let me not be negative about it, right? I'm happy that they're doing it. It's just in my mind, when you see a system that works so well, like transmog in another game, and you know you have great armor that people like to wear, why would that not be more of a priority to get that, you know, kind of going?
Yeah, know? It's, I mean, again, there's a lot of things in Destiny's history where it's like, why did it take this long to get it? And so I hear you. It's hard to not be negative. It's like, why didn't we have this or that? At least they're finally doing it, you know? So
this is why I stopped doing In Orbit, because every time, like, we did In Orbit toward the beginning of Destiny. And every episode I'm like, why don't they have transmog? Why don't they have this? Why don't they have that? And that was what, 7 years ago, you know, no system had already been in place. So yeah, it's a bit frustrating, and I try not to be super negative about it, but I am glad they're doing it, because I mean, I feel like I said on Twitter, I want Destiny to be good so bad. Mm-hmm. It is such a good game when they actually have the bugs out, when they have the content together, you know, but the mechanics behind the game are really good. It's one of the best shooters you will play, from a first person shooting perspective. It is one of the best you will play, but there's always been a problem with having enough content, with bugs. Like, I mean, there was like years where the Crucible was damn near unplayable.
Yeah,
forget Iron Banner, you know. So, yeah, it's just a little frustrating. It's like having a child and they're just not reaching their potential. That's definitely like.
I mean, it's interesting to say, like, because we always say there's not enough content in Destiny, and I earnestly believe that there's not enough engaging content. Right. But they went on to say in their video, they went on to say the plethora of activities they do have, and I want to run through this real quick. 40 story missions, 9 destinations, 54 adventures, 42 lost sectors, 17 strikes, 31 PvP maps, 12 one-off special activities, 7 raids, so on and so. I can just keep going, but the point of what I'm saying is there's a ton of content, but it's also bloated because we've been playing it for all so long that it doesn't even feel like there's content in the game anymore, you know?
Right. That's the thing. Like, it took them 7 years to get to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the deal. So they're also working on improving the quest log. Amen to that. Next gen consoles, they addressed Destiny 2 owners will not have to rebuy the game. They'll be able to play on the new consoles. I guess it's going to be some type of upgrade. You'll probably just be able to download it. You only have to buy it, I guess. I wonder if they're going to have discs for this game now. If they're going to print discs for PS5 and the new Xbox. Actually, the new Xbox, they won't have to. For PS5, they will. Actually, no, they won't. They won't, because I'm pretty sure Destiny 2 will be a backward compatible game for PS5.
I'm sure it will be, because Bungie's one of like the main titles on their the PS5 release that they had. Trying to look at the pre-order bonus for it, because I saw a picture of what's there, and I'm wondering if there's a physical copy, because I feel like with them not having Activision, it would not make financial sense to do a physical print.
Right.
You know, they're basically an indie company now. So I don't know. It's a good question.
It's free to play up until the current season. So, I think they might just be download only. But they're saying that there will be intergenerational crossplay. Well, yeah, no shit. I mean, and I think the important thing is that they are working on multi-platform crossplay. Not this year, hopefully by next year they have multi-platform crossplay. I think that'll be massive for the Destiny community. You'll just basically bring everybody together.
Yeah.
At that point.
So just to clarify, on the pre-order bonus, it does say digital code only. So they're not going to do a physical print, it looks like.
Okay.
So good call on them, in my opinion. And for what you're talking about, I think it's important to note that when Destiny 1 had to drop support for Xbox and Xbox 360 and PS3, it really fractured a lot of the community. And then when PC came out, it splintered it even more into like these smaller sections, right?
Yep.
So I think them having the cross-generational between PS4 and PS5 is super important, because instead of having, let's not include Stadia because who cares, but instead of having potentially five different platforms, you're only going to still have three. So I think it's really important for the health of their game to maintain that. But I agree, they have to, hopefully Sony gets on board, because really that's the only thing holding them back from having everyone doing it together, you know. Hopefully they can get that going next year.
Well, I think it's more than that. I think because they're using a proprietary engine, so they have to build crossplay into it, essentially.
That's
it's not
true.
Like using the Unreal Engine. That's what they're looking for. And that, I mean, that's going to be a major overhaul for their current game engine. I think once that happens, that it's going to be huge. The only thing they're going to have to worry about at that point is the Crucible, because right now Fortnite is having a bit of a problem with the fact that it's actually more advantageous to play with a controller than a mouse and a keyboard, which is insane because of not the auto aim, but I guess technically speaking, it is auto aim, the aim assist. So yeah, they're going to have to really watch it. There's two ways to handle that. Like Overwatch, there is no aim assist on PC. Fortnite, they went the complete other way. I was like, no, just use a controller because, yeah, you'll be able to track better. So
Destiny being free to play and appealing to the masses and the casual fan base, there's no shot they're going to remove any sort of aim assist, because that's what makes Destiny feel so good, is the stickiness on a controller. It feels just as good on a controller as it does mouse and keyboard.
Right.
I mean, some guns like Last Word on controller are already broken. I mean, they're dominating the Crucible if you use it. I mean, I don't think that it necessarily has the advantage, but there's definitely been that conversation happening for the past month for a cry for to lower the aim assist on PC. So
they also said that the new consoles will play at 60 FPS in 4K. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's keep in mind that most PC players are playing at 140. I shouldn't say most. That's an over. I know I'm playing at 144 hertz. You know,
I am as well. So we're a little spoiled, I'm sure.
The Series X can get to 120 hertz. Like, let that beast loose, man. Let it loose. Let him play at 120 hertz.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that they're finally going to get 60. I hope it's a constant 60 and not, you know, you get into a raid and it drops to 45. That would be crushing. But yeah. this hardware should be able to handle it. Hopefully they can optimize it.
And I will say this, Destiny looks amazing at higher resolutions. Like, I didn't think there was going to be, I'm not even playing at 4K. I'm playing at 1440p, and switching from 1080p to 1440p at like 100, you know, 100 plus frames, the game looks phenomenal.
Same. Like, I run it on like every high setting possible at 144p because it's just such a gorgeous game. Yeah. I mean, it's the art team in that game is incredible. The new cradle that they just introduced with that tree is one of the prettiest things I've ever seen in a video game. You know, it's a beautiful game.
Yeah, and the effects like really help too. So
it's they got those particle effects down.
Yeah. So let's hop into the Destiny content vault, like your favorite content is soon. But, so basically, they're saying they're having trouble maintaining all of the current content for Destiny 2. So they're actually going to start removing older content and putting into the content vault. First of all, let me talk about the good part of this. The good part of this is that they are going to actually start pulling content from Destiny 1 and making it available in Destiny 2. Once again, I went to go change my name, but then they said that, and I was like, well, I predicted that shit last year. Well, you know what? They didn't even say anything. It's when I saw the moon, right? When I got into Shadowkeep and I did a full circle of the moon, and I'm just like, holy shit, like, they didn't rebuild this. This is exactly the way it was. They pulled this from Destiny 1. Even certain parts that you could only get into, like, in strikes, is there. You can get to those places now. And I'm like, they just brought it out of Destiny 1. I'm sure they had to spruce it up a bit, make some changes to it to a degree, but they didn't rebuild it from scratch. I'm like, they're going to bring Destiny 1 to Destiny 2. Now, I will say that I thought they were actually just going to make all the Destiny 1 content available and the Destiny 2 content available. But I guess because of the size of their team, they can't handle that. They can't manage that. And this is one of the negative effects of them departing from Activision. Because Activision could have definitely, it's not uncommon for them to move resources around for them to accommodate. Like, they could have had a second massive MMO style game besides World of Warcraft with this. Like, if you could play all of Destiny 1's content and Destiny 2's content, that actually makes for a really good game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, leaving Activision means you lose the resources that they had with Vicarious Visions and High Moon Studios, which were really important in the implementation of the PC version of this game, and they helped build raids and different expansions and stuff. With the team being what it is now, and Bungie's working on a new IP at the same time, they've had to really like think outside the box on how to be efficient with quote unquote new content on a regular basis. As an old D1 player, I don't necessarily want to play Destiny 1 all over again, but I do love that they're just going to be bringing it back in. I think that at some point they'd need to drop the 2 and just call it Destiny and just make it a long living universe, which I think should have been the plan instead of a D2 as well. But, it's going to be interesting. I'm excited to see stuff like Vault of Glass and King's Fall come back because I have a lot of really fun memories of those raids with, you know, a lot of people. So It'll be fun to see what they do with it, and if it leads to them being more efficient at handling bugs and dealing with their spaghetti code, which they clearly have some problems with, then good. If it helps, then I'll take it. So,
yeah, I think the way they've handled Destiny up to now, it really feels like a lot of short-term thinking. Like, Destiny 2 was clearly an expansion. It wasn't a new game. It was an expansion. I understand that they redid the engine. However, World of Warcraft also rebuilt their engine, and it was just an expansion.
Yeah,
you know, D2 was an expansion. There was no reason to call it Destiny 2 in the first place. Another reason why they, I think it's not just the fact that the game or their team size is too small for the game, but I think it also has to do with the way the engine works, and they'd probably have to do another rebuild of the engine to handle such a massive amount of content. You know,
yeah, I mean, the download size of the game, I think they said it's over 115 gigs now. And then they talk about 0.3% of activities done in one activity corresponded to 5% of storage, which is just outlandish. And so they know they have some internal, you know, infrastructure problems in regards to what's being played and how much storage is taken up. So again, right, if this is their first long-term solution, because I agree with you, they're always just slapping Band-Aids on things and hoping for the best. and it usually just gets ripped off really quickly by the whole community. So if this is their first approach at long term, again, I hope it works. What is exciting is that when they take stuff away and put it in the vault, they're going to be working on those to improve and re-release down the road. So the optimist in me hopes when they take away Titan that they work on it and reintroduce us so we can get into the arcology and stuff. That would be really cool if that's their way of changing the worlds akin to what World of Warcraft did. I can't remember the name of the expansion that blew everything
Cataclysm.
Up. Cataclysm. But if this is their approach to a Cataclysm kind of approach, then I'm all for it because that sounds awesome. But again, I just hope they can do that.
Right. So before we go, let's just talk about the Season of Arrivals. You mentioned it a bit earlier. I know there's going to be a new exotic quest, new dungeon. But I think the important part is really that what you said, from a lore perspective, it's getting you ready for what's going to come. I think not just with this expansion, but the next two after that as well. It's really trying to prep players for, okay, this is the story of Destiny. Get ready.
So again, to kind of re-hit what we just talked about with a long-term approach, I think we are finally seeing for the first time ever them having an actual story laid out that they know the whole outline of and they know the ending to. They have rewritten and rewritten their story so many times that they've never had a clear, concise vision. And I think they're finally there. And that's why they went as far to announce the next three expansions. They know what they're going to do. And so again, the Bungie has amazing writers. The grimoire in this game, well, not in the game, that you have to go online to look up and all that. The writing is amazing.
Correct you there.
Yeah. So if they can bring that into the game and make this story cohesive, and just the first week of this new season, I played a little bit, but I played the story mission, and it's one of the better story missions they've done in a long time. Not only was it difficult, but the setting and the mood were very evident. Like, holy shit, darkness is here. Pyramid ships are here. We got some really bad stuff to unpack, and it doesn't feel time gated anymore. It feels like it's just week by week building up to this huge cataclysm. I can't use for lack of a better word in the fall. So I mean, I'm excited for the first time in a long time about them telling a story, which is good, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I uninstalled Destiny late last year, and I'm considering reinstalling it now because I am hoping that it is good. Unfortunately, I will not be buying the expansion until I get word that no, it's good. You know, like we're good to go. I need the level of people telling me about like it was Forsaken. I had everybody telling me Forsaken was a good expansion, and that's why I'm going to need to get it. But I really do hope that it's great. What I think is happening from a story perspective, and this is just a guess, I don't have any inside information, I think they're actually picking up an old story thread from the Grimoire that suggested that the Light is actually the bad guy, that the Traveler is the bad guy. That would make a lot of sense, especially with a piece of dialogue that was said during the trailer for the Season of Arrivals, where the Darkness is talking to the Guardian and says, there's no need for weapons, we only bring the truth, you know. And then the working title for the 2022 expansion is Lightfall.
Lightfall,
so I would not be surprised if in the next few years you find out that the Traveler is actually a huge asshole. I mean
that'd be boy awesome.
His boy was.
That would be awesome because, I mean, for a lot of people that didn't play Destiny 1, so the Traveler chose the human race instead of the Fallen, right? He could have chose the Fallen, and that's what we're going to dive into in the fall, is the Fallen, the Ariana, she's upset about that that choice. So we're going to dive into that, and if it goes in that direction, which it definitely could, I'll be fucking thrilled, man. That'll be so much fun to see him go down that path. So
yeah, not to mention, like, you think about some of the stuff that happened even in with the Gaul, with the Gaul story, where I forget his buddy's name, but his buddy's like, dude, it's just a fucking machine. It's a machine. Like, it's not like some spiritual, you know, whatever. And he was getting mad at Gaul, but Gaul was treating it like it was like a god, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see, like, you know, maybe, who knows, like the I'm not sure if you watch Doctor Who or whatever, but maybe like the Darkness is actually like the Jadoon, like the police of the universe,
right,
and they're
right.
coming to get this war criminal or something like that. You know, I think that'd be pretty cool. So, but we'll see. So you got any final thoughts before we go?
I mean, I'll say this, like we talked about, Bungie's really good at getting the rails going on the hype train. This preview that they put together this past Tuesday was less flashy trailers than they've ever done before. And I'm more excited than I ever have been for the future of Destiny. All of my old buddies that I play Destiny with, we've been playing nothing but like Valorant for the past 3 months. And we all jumped back on Destiny this whole week just for the excitement of the future. So if they can promise on that kind of hopefulness of this being their first really big venture on their own, I mean, I hope for the best for them because I love Bungie as a studio. I really do. I want this game to be amazing, just like you said. And hopefully they pull it off. I'm really rooting for them to do it because I'd love to play this game for another 3 years and enjoy the shit out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm really hoping, I mean, I don't get people who want games to be bad just to be bad. Like maybe so because they said shit about the game and they want to be right. Like, I don't give a fuck. I've been talking about shit about Destiny for years and I've been right about the shit that I've been talking about too, but I still want Destiny to be great. I want Anthem to be great. You know what I'm saying? When they rebuild Anthem, I want it to be fucking awesome because I want to play.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really hoping, like you said, we're both really hoping that it's good. I think I am going to reinstall Destiny because I have the season pass from, you know, which was pretty much a big waste because of the way they handled the seasons. But I have the season pass from you know, Destiny. So I can probably hop back and get through the slog of Shadowkeep and then maybe play some of the new content. And, you know, we'll see what happens when, you know, we get started. But thanks a lot, dude, for coming on and talking Destiny.
Yeah, man. It was fun. Thanks for having me on, man. It was a good time to just talk games.
All right. I'd like to thank you for listening. Coming up this week on Mash Those Buttons, we have a new Push the Point, which is our Overwatch League podcast, a new Double Tap, which is our fighting game podcast, a new Torn in the Goblin, which you can also hear Nick there, that is our Warcraft story and lore podcast, a new Wondrous Tales, which is our Final Fantasy 14 podcast, and a new Drop and Spicy, which is our Apex Legends podcast. I'd also like to remind everybody that We Are Survivors, our Last of Us limited series, is available on, I think, every major podcast platform at this point. So you can check it out there if you're looking forward to The Last of Us. If you want to find Nick on social media, you can do so at twitter.com/WookieBH. And if you want to find me, you can find me at twitter.com/JoshStradamus. Or you can also find me streaming on twitch.tv/MashThoseButtons. Definitely every Friday when we do cage drops for GTFO. You can also, like I mentioned earlier, follow the network at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. And like I mentioned earlier, we'd like to have you join our Discord community so we can, you know, talk about some games, which is mash.gg/Discord. I encourage you guys to reach out to us with your comments and questions. And you can do so. You can either hit us on Discord or on Twitter, or you can send us an email at contact@mash.gg. If you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others and also to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. If you want to take your support a bit further, you can become a supporter on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month. You can gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. And we also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And you can also drop a Twitch subscription if you prefer to support that way, which is twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons again. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. So with that, we are done for this week. Next week should be a bit more normal. Thanks for listening. See you then. Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.